This video is made possible by CuriosityStream and Team Seas. Let's all help remove 30 million pounds of trash from the ocean by visiting teamseas.org down in the link below. If you live outside of the Iberian Peninsula, then Portugal is probably a country that you probably don't think about very often. Located across a small sliver on the outer edges of the European continent, Portugal is only the world's 109th largest country as measured by land, and with a population of only a tad more than 10 million, she is only the 89th most populous. But once upon a time, Portugal was far, far more important and menacing. At the apex of her global power, the Portuguese Empire once spanned across the globe from South America to Asia. She dominated the entirety of the Indian Ocean, monopolized the world's most lucrative trade, and her territory on land across four continents was collectively larger than even the Roman Empire was at its zenith under the Emperor Trajan. But over the centuries, her empire was gradually whittled away down to her relatively small position in the modern era. But land isn't everything. While Portugal's territory on land may be tiny in the grand scheme of modern 21st century nations, her territory on the high seas is anything but and spans from Lisbon halfway to North America across the Atlantic. And she's planning on making it even larger. If everything goes according to the plan, Portugal will enormously expand her oceanic territory as early as next year and will almost overnight become one of the world's largest countries. At least on paper. For when you add together land territory and maritime territory, Portugal's ambitious plan will place herself as the world's 16th largest country, far ahead of places that you conventionally would think of as being larger, like Argentina, Algeria, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Turkey, or Germany. And as I'm about to explain, Portugal is one of history's strangest and most unique countries. And her plan to return back to the world stage with a bang is one of the most strange and unique projects being undertaken in the 21st century. More than 600 years ago, the Portuguese became the first of many European nations to expand beyond the European continent by conquering and settling a colony on another. Ceuta in North Africa. Seized from the Moors in 1415, the Portuguese began the imperial age of European colonialism, and unbeknownst to anyone, especially them at the time, they would also be destined to become the final ones who would end it nearly six centuries later. In between that time, the Portuguese Empire rapidly expanded across the globe as her explorers, merchants, and soldiers sought new lands to discover, trade with, exploit, and conquer, and new peoples to spread their faith to. Portugal evolved into the world's very first global maritime and commercial empire, and for centuries was one of the world's most formidable great powers. They divided the entire planet in half with Spain and through a series of strategic bases and colonies, at various choke points, came to dominate the entire Indian Ocean and monopolized the lucrative spice trade which flowed across it. By the later half of the 16th century, the Portuguese Empire had naval outposts that spanned from Lisbon to Nagasaki, and by the beginning of the 19th century, the empire spanned from Brazil to Africa to India to the Indies and to China. But a series of ever-increasingly bad misfortunes would gradually lead to the unraveling of the entire thing. In 1755, a massive earthquake totally destroyed the Portuguese capital of Lisbon, severely disrupting her colonial ambitions. Then, in 1807, Napoleon's French Empire invaded and occupied Portugal, which even further disrupted her colonial ambitions and prompted the Portuguese royal family to flee Lisbon for Rio de Janeiro and their colony of Brazil. After Napoleon was defeated and Portugal liberated, the royal family remained in Brazil and established Rio de Janeiro as the new capital of the entire Portuguese Empire, which interestingly marked the only time in history that a European power was directly ruled from one of its own colonies. But it didn't last for very long. Just 6 years later, in 1821, a liberal revolution back in European Portugal prompted the king to finally leave Brazil for home. And then his son, who had remained behind in Brazil, decided to seize the opportunity and declared Brazil's independence and became the newly crowned Emperor of Brazil. Portugal and their king recognized Brazil's independence ruled by the king's son shortly afterward in 1825. But the loss of her largest and most valuable colony was a significant political and financial blow that she wouldn't ever truly recover from. Following the loss, Portugal decided to spend the rest of the 19th century refocusing her empire away from the Americas and back towards the continent where the empire had first expanded into, Africa. Her primary colonies there were located along the coasts on opposite ends of the continent in present-day Angola and Mozambique. And after the loss of Brazil, her primary goal became expanding her territory across the African interior between them in order to create a contiguous Portuguese colony from west to east. However, this imperial ambition directly conflicted with the British Empire's very similar plan of establishing their own contiguous stretch of British colonies from the south in Cape Town up to the north in Cairo. And so, the British gave Portugal an ultimatum: either cease their colonial ambitions in the center of Africa or face the consequences. Portugal chose to quit, but retained the colonies in Angola and Mozambique along the coasts. By the early 20th century, Portugal still maintained a vast empire across Africa and Asia, but then in the 1930s, something rather interesting happened. The wave of authoritarianism that swept across Europe after the First World War reached Portugal as well, which gradually evolved into a right-wing dictatorship led by this man, Antonio de Oliveira Salazar. Portugal remained neutral through the Second World War, and in the conflict's aftermath, the decolonization movement rapidly gained momentum across the European empires, who still largely dominated Africa and Asia. But notably, Portugal strongly resisted. Salazar and the dictatorship ruling the country began to stop referring to Portugal as an empire, but as a so-called pluricontinental nation with many overseas provinces. Whereas the other European empires by and large referred to their colonial possessions as what they were, colonies, the Portuguese began insisting that all of their overseas territories like Angola, Mozambique, Goa in India, and Macau in China were full-on legitimate provinces and parts of Portugal itself, while all the people who lived in them were actual Portuguese, and that the Portuguese nation spanned many continents and many peoples. Throughout this period, Portugal created several maps that were intended to showcase how massive a country they truly were. Like this one that showed how European Portugal could fit 10 times inside of Angola, or this one that shows how, when combined, the many overseas provinces of the Portuguese nation spanned almost the entirety of Europe. But despite what the Portuguese government at the time was saying, these places were, by and large, very much treated as colonies rather than provinces. For example, despite being labeled as a full province of Portugal, with the government insisting that everybody who lived inside were actual citizens, less than 1% of the black African population of Mozambique ever became full official citizens of Portugal, and the territory was heavily segregated along racial lines. As more and more European empires began granting their colonies independence, Salazar and the Portuguese regime were determined to hold on to all of theirs at all costs, and decades of needless tragedy ensued. After the British granted India independence in 1947, Portugal still held on to the city of Goa and refused all requests from India to give it up, continuing to insist that it was a core integral part of Portugal. Frustrated, India invaded the city in 1961 and annexed it, and it would take Portugal over 23 years to ever actually recognize it. At about the same time, violent protests against Portuguese rule began in Angola and then rapidly spread to the rest of their African territories from there. Across the 1960s, nearly every European power withdrew from most of their colonies on the continent, but Portugal fought a devastating 13-year-long guerrilla war to maintain all of theirs. They introduced a draft that conscripted all men in the country to serve for 4 years in the armed forces, and nearly every conscript recruited this way went to Africa to fight. An entire generation of Portuguese men were shipped off to war, while thousands more of them fled the country in order to avoid it. By the early 1970s, Portugal was fully and singularly focused on fighting the war to preserve their empire, and they were spending a full 40% of their annual budget fighting it. boats. The relatively small Portuguese military was hopelessly overextended across three different theaters of war in Africa, and they were becoming increasingly isolated over their hardline colonial stance. It was one of the few rare Cold War-era conflicts where both the United States and the Soviet Union took the same side, the rebels, whereas Portugal really only maintained support from the apartheid states of South Africa and Rhodesia, and Francoist Spain, who all themselves were pretty much also international pariahs of the time. By 1974, with the war still raging after 13 years, nearly 20% of Portugal's entire male population had been mobilized to fight in the conflict. And after thousands of casualties with no end anywhere in sight, the population had become weary of war. That same year, a leftist faction of army officers overthrew the 43-year-long dictatorship and declared an immediate end to the war, along with a new commitment to decolonize. Shortly afterwards, by 1975, all of Portugal's African colonies and East Timor in Asia had finally declared their independence. Portugal had been the first European nation to establish a colony in Africa all the way back in 1415, and now, nearly six centuries later, they were also the last one to leave. The only colonial possession that Portugal still had left was Little Macau in China, but that too was about to expire. In 1999, 2 years after the British gave Hong Kong back, the Portuguese too peacefully returned Macau back to China, which finally ended Portugal's 600-year continent-spanning empire. By this point, all the land that Portugal had left was mainland European Portugal itself and the islands of Madeira and the Azores in the Atlantic. But, as they've done many times before in the past, the Portuguese always have a creative way of seeming like they're much bigger than they really are. In 1994, the United Nations Conference on the Law of the Sea, or UNCLOS, came into effect. Basically, this treaty established the rules of what amounts of oceanic territory the countries of the world could legally lay claim to as defined by territorial waters and exclusive economic zones, or EEZs. Territorial waters were defined as all of the area stretching out to 3 miles from a country's shoreline, wherein the country maintains full and complete sovereignty and can basically do anything they want. Stretching out from 3 miles to 200 miles away from the country's coastline is the EEZ, wherein the country maintains no sovereignty on the ocean's surface, but practically maintains full sovereignty beneath the ocean's surface, which effectively means that they can't prevent anybody from traveling across above, but they do maintain the exclusive rights to harvest all of the resources inside of the ocean, like fish, oil, gas, minerals, treasure, and whatever else you can think of. This is the biggest reason why countries all across the world today fight so hard to maintain their tiny islands across the world. Because it's not really the islands themselves that are important. It's the 200 miles of ocean that surround the islands that might contain truly valuable resources that's actually important. That is partially why Argentina and the United Kingdom fought an entire war over the Falklands. It's why France maintains the world's largest oceanic empire across the planet, and it's why China claims such a seemingly unreasonable amount of islands and ocean in the South China Sea. This is all very important for Portugal because, under these rules, Portugal currently maintains the world's 20th largest EEZ. They have the 200 miles stretching out from mainland Portugal itself, the 200 miles surrounding Madeira, and the 200 miles surrounding the various islands of the Azores archipelago. For a country that's only the 109th largest by land, maintaining the 20th largest EEZ with exclusive access to all of the potential resources inside is a pretty big deal. But Portugal is planning on punching even further above their weight very soon. You see, the UNCLOS treaty also provides the ability to theoretically extend a country's maritime territory even further into a third category beyond the EEZ called the Extended Continental Shelf. The continental shelf is the shallow part of the ocean from which dry land rises above, and countries can technically claim the part of this shelf that extends between 200 and 350 miles from beyond their coastline, or in other words, 150 miles further beyond their already existing EEZ. Within this zone, the country has no sovereignty above or within the sea, but maintains full sovereignty on the sea's floor and beneath it. What this all effectively means is that they can't enforce any rules on people passing passing above or beneath the waves, and they can't prevent anybody from coming in and fishing, but they do possess the exclusive rights to mine and drill for oil and gas and other resources that may exist on or beneath the sea's floor. In the case of Portugal, their proposal to the United Nations for their own extended continental shelf will expand Portugal's total maritime territory across the North Atlantic to an area of more than 3,877,000 square kilometers, which is a huge territory that's even larger than the land area of India. If realized, this will boost Portugal to possessing not the world's 20th largest maritime territory, but the 10th largest. And if you combine every country's land and maritime boundaries together, this would hypothetically transform Portugal into the world's 16th largest nation. A very high ranking indeed compared to only the world's 109th largest when measuring only the land. A trick that clever Portugal can use to claim once again to be among the world's largest and greatest nations. It is important to note, however, that this territorial measurement of Portugal would make the Portuguese nation more than 97% water. But that's kind of Portugal's whole plan. Portugal began her period of empire building 6 centuries ago by setting sail across the Atlantic. And her modern plan of the 21st century is to return to that very same sea, by this time controlling the sea itself and the resources within, rather than the resources, lands, and people beyond it. It is why Portugal refers to this plan as Portugal é Mar, or Portugal is the sea. The new Portuguese Empire of the 21st century. For thousands of years now, all of humanity has relied upon the vast ocean for our survival. Across it, we transport nearly all of our cargo and goods on ships. Beneath it, we harvest vast quantities of food to feed ourselves. On the floor, we exploit it for oil and natural gas, while at the surface, we construct windmills to power our modern civilizations. In turn, the ocean provides us with half of the planet's oxygen. It stores 50 times more carbon dioxide than our atmosphere does, and since it covers most of the Earth's surface, the ocean regulates all of our climates and weather patterns. And perhaps most spectacularly of all, the ocean's sheer beauty and spectacular wonder has amazed and inspired us all for countless generations. But recently, we as a species have not been treating the ocean with the respect it deserves. For decades, we've been dumping millions of tons of garbage into the world's oceans, and it's become so much that nobody even knows for certain how much there even is. The best guess, made in 2015, suggests that as much as 150 million metric tons of plastic is currently littering the world's oceans. And if nothing changes by 2040, that amount is estimated to increase to 600 million metric tons. This is a cataclysmic crisis that's placing the health of the entire ocean we all rely upon in jeopardy. But there's something we can all do right now to help. Normally, this video would have been sponsored by CuriosityStream, but they've graciously donated this video's sponsor slot to Team Seas instead to help save our ocean. Team Seas has one simple goal: to raise $30 million by New Year's Day on January 1st, 2022, in order to remove 30 million pounds of trash from our oceans, rivers, and beaches. When you go to visit teamseas.org using the link that's down in the description, every $1 you donate translates directly into 1 pound of trash that will be removed from the ocean. 100% of the money that's being raised by this is going directly to Team Seas' nonprofit partners, the Ocean Cleanup and Ocean Conservancy. I won't be seeing any of it, and neither will any of the other creators who are running this mission. It literally all goes to clean up the trash in our oceans, and I'm proud to announce that I'm personally donating $5,000 myself to remove 5,000 pounds of this trash. So, if you'd like to join me and help reach our goal to remove 30 million total pounds of garbage from the world's oceans, head over to teamseas.org right now by clicking the button that's on your screen, and for every dollar you donate, you'll help remove 1 pound of garbage. Thank you so much for watching, and I'm excited to see what we can all do together on this.